Hello and welcome to the co-production podcast. Today I'm joined once again by Noreen Blondlay, the co-founder of the Co-Production Network for Wales. Hi Noreen.
Hi Mike.
And today we're going to be sharing with you our frequently asked questions, the things we're most approached with as the Co-Production Network for Wales from people wanting our help and support. We're going to share those questions with you, and importantly, we're going to share what we believe are the beginning of the answers to those questions as well. Noreen and I have put our heads together, come up with our top five, and we're going to walk through them one by one. So without further ado, I'm going to get things underway. And question one is, how much does it cost to do co-production? So Noreen, over to you.
Thanks, Mike. I want to say not very much, and at least not in the beginning. Because actually what's important when you do co-production is to build relationships with people and start having different kinds of conversations. And that doesn't cost anything except a bit of a change in mindset. So you got to be clear on what you're trying to achieve, keep focusing on building great relationships, keep thinking about whose agenda is this, who's got the power, let's be clear about, you know, what we can and can't do. But let's just have a different kind of interaction here. And that doesn't have to cost anything. Or to be more exact, it doesn't have to cost very much. The things that are important in co-production is being able to make sure there's cake when you're inviting people in to give their time. I'm laughing because that's always my thing. It's like, make sure there is cake. And it's a bit of a running joke, but it's also important to, if we ask people to come and help us and give their time and their goodwill, that actually we welcome them and we make them feel comfortable and we recognize, you know, don't be the bad friend who only asks people for stuff when they need something, but actually let's build a solid relationship where we have an ongoing interaction. And part of that is recognizing each other's value and making each other feel welcome and comfortable. That's a small part of it. So there are some costs in terms of covering people's expenses and getting cake in and cups of tea and that kind of thing. But it's quite small in the greater scheme of things. And what this enables you to do is once you've been having these conversations and you're starting in the process and you're starting to see some change in terms of how things are working and what difference this approach is making, you're kind of offering a proof of concept really there. And that means that you can start thinking about, okay, well, how can we do this more, or how can we do more of it in different places? And maybe there is a cost there in terms of changing how we gear our systems towards enabling this to happen. But the thing is, it's not additional cost. I always think of it more as a refocusing of budgets, because actually you'll find that if you're doing effective co-production in one corner, it'll be saving resources, being less wasteful in another corner, and that can then be refocused. So it's more about juggling around what you've got rather than trying to find a pot of money somewhere.
And so for those who fear that costs could be prohibitive and a barrier to doing co-production, whilst for sure it's hard to put an exact figure on it because no two co-production projects are the same, to start with, it probably costs a lot less than you might think.
Yes, nicely put.
And closely connected to our frequently asked question number one about money is frequently asked question number two about time, which is, what do you do if you don't have enough time to do co-production well? This is something we're asked an awful lot. So Noreen, how do you go about answering people when they come to us with this?
Well, I always say that a bit of co-production is better than no co-production. So I will always take it. If just because the conditions aren't perfect and ideal to do amazing co-production in every sector doesn't mean you shouldn't do it at all. Don't let that put you off. And it's true that co-production takes time and takes longer in principle than doing it sort of behind closed doors, let's make decisions and just roll it out. But to counterbalance that, I just want to say that when we do that, you know, let's just sort it out quickly so it's out there, it won't work for everybody. And then things will break and we'll have to do this again and again and again and again. And so actually in the long run, we keep putting in these failing solutions that don't work for the majority. When actually, if you co-produce it once, it might take longer than one small loop of doing it for people, but actually you get the buy-in, you get the creativity, you get the diversity of thinking, and you get a solution that's really robust and sustainable, and you don't have to do it over and over again. So in the long run, it's a time saving, but I can understand that when you're looking at, you know, one iteration of one project, that it looks like it's going to take longer. And if you don't have the time it takes to build the relationships and build the trust, then it can feel like it's a losing battle because you don't have the right conditions to do what you need to do. My advice would be try and do as much as you can do. Be honest and transparent with the people that you're working with, your citizens and your service users, that, you know, this is all the time we have, or this is all the budget we have, coming back to the previous question, or these are the parameters that we have to work within. You know, these things are within our gift and these others are not. And so if we want to do something, we've got to see what we can change within this little framework. And it might not feel like very much, but it's always setting a precedent and a stepping stone. And next time it'll be a bit more, next time it'll be a bit more. So do what you can. And also think of it as you're not doing a co-production project. You're building a co-productive relationship. So even if this loop is only, I don't know, 3 months or 6 weeks or however long you've got, actually make sure you tell people what happened out of it and make sure you try and keep in touch with them so that the next project or the next thing that comes up, you're still having these conversations and it feels like there's continuity and the relationship builds throughout. It's not just a task and finish approach.
I think that's so important. And it's about remembering that Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah.
And if you feel that you don't have enough time, as you say, make the most of the time you have and remember that co-production isn't a project, which you can start now and will end really soon. It's a way of working, which you'll start now and continue forever. And so taking that first step is a crucial part of the journey. And spend whatever time that you have available doing whatever you can do, and you're already ahead of where you were yesterday.
That's very true.
And question number three, and all of these are connected, which is perhaps unsurprising, and that all of these questions in some shape or form are about making those first steps easier to achieve, overcoming those potential barriers and challenges to getting the ball rolling. And question number three is one many people listening may have encountered. What if you want to do co-production yourself, but you're struggling to get that buy-in to support co-production from higher up in your organization?
Yeah, good question. We hear that a lot, and it can be a real challenge. Again, I think it's find your, several things in my head about this. One is find your allies and the people on the same wavelength as you inside your organization, because it's always easier to do the strength in numbers rather than trying to do it as a lone voice. So you find the people on the same wavelength and do what you know and what you think is right and do what you can do. Similarly to the, you know, what if we don't have enough time question, is do as much as you can do. And be transparent with the people that you're working with that these are the bits that we can work on and the rest at the moment is out of bounds until things change and things evolve. So do your best, be clear about what you can and can't do. And, you know, we have legislation in Wales that says that organisations should be responding to the Social Services and Wellbeing Act and the Future Generations Act. Wellbeing of Future Generations Act and doing co-production involvement. So there are actually, you know, there's actually a legal responsibility, a regulatory responsibility in organizations to do this work. So if you can do what you can do and show that something's working and improving, then again, you're making the case for how the organization that you're embedded in can respond to the acts better. And so that's a bonus for the organization. But I understand that, you know, it's quite difficult for organizations to change all the bits and pieces. But if you're in a position where you're managing a team or you're managing people who have an interest in co-production, or you're trying to get your team to do co-production, the best thing you can do as a manager is to give your team permission and support to try stuff, to take that step out of their comfort zone, to do things a bit differently from the normal previous way of doing it, and actually support them and not come down on them like a ton of bricks if there's mistakes or if things don't work out as expected. Because actually, it's about learning by doing. We don't have the answers for this. We have to try things and figure out what sticks, what doesn't. And when things don't work, it's as much a learning as when things do. And so if you can create that space for your people to take that approach and try things and get comfortable and familiar with this mindset and this way of working, then you're going to be changing the culture in your little bit of the organization. And actually that will have a knock-on effect and a ripple effect on all the other bits. And you'll be contributing to the overall culture change and to co-production being more embedded overall. Don't give up.
And it's about those little steps again, I guess. And again, like you say, there'll be people listening who are struggling to get that buy-in from high up in the organization. There'll be people listening who maybe are high up in the organization and can unlock the door to that happening below them and beneath them. And so everyone can reflect on what's within my control. Am I doing all I can to enable better practice to occur?
That's right.
And as you say, not only is there in certain sectors, especially in Wales, that legal imperative to be doing co-production, but even when in a small way, the first steps to more participatory ways of working take place, they start to deliver outcomes and impacts. They start to build up an evidence base of stories and experiences, which can feed up into the hierarchy of the organization, show that benefit, generate that learning, which slowly chips away and slowly evolves the culture. So like with time, like with money, that buy-in may take time to develop, but each small step is a positive step in the right direction.
Yes.
Question four is a little different and is one we hear a lot and one we dedicate a lot of thought to in our own reflection. But hopefully, if we've done a good job throughout our conversations over the last few weeks of this series, we'll be selling people the idea of co-production, its value, the fact that it's the right way to do things with the right people in the right place at the right time, and it can deliver real change and really meaningful, lasting impacts to people. So with all of that said, why isn't there more co-production happening? Why is it the exception, not the rule? Why don't we see it everywhere we look?
I think the nutshell answer to that is, we're at the start of a journey here in Wales. When you think about it, you know, in 2020, as we're recording this, the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act is only 5 years old. Actually, it came into being in 2016. The Social Services and Wellbeing Act of 2014 came into, you know, application in 2015. 4 or 5 years is nothing in policy terms, really. And although we've got this statutory duty, you know, in public bodies and organizations in Wales to do these things, it takes a while to change the culture and to actually get to grips with these new ways of working that the Act set a vision for and that we're being encouraged to do. And from my experience of talking to all sorts of different people from all sorts of different kind of levels of organizations, broadly speaking, and this is broad strokes, but what I'm tending to see is that executive and senior management teams tend to get that co-production and citizen involvement is an important thing that organizations need to get to grips with, either because they're sold on the benefits and the impact and the potential that it has to be really transformative, or because it's a statutory duty and it's something that they accept they have to do because it says so in law. So you've got this top layer of people saying, yeah, co-production is a good thing, go forth and do it, you know, instructing their organization to do co-production. And then at the other end of the hierarchy, we've got people who work on the front line, who support people every day, work with service users and the people they support. And again, broadly speaking, it's an approach that makes sense. You know, it's being able to make the right decision at the right time to help people in the right way. It's common sense. It's trying to get some of the systems that normally get in the way out of the way so that they can do the job the way they intend to do their job, you know, be genuinely, you know, educators and social workers and people who actually support other humans in a really human way. So broadly speaking, co-production, when people get their head around it on the front line, it seems like a good idea. And then somewhere in the middle between these two layers of the hierarchy, we've got a bunch of people who manage the systems that enable organizations to run. And I have so much empathy for them because they're stuck between senior teams that go, please go do co-production, and then frontline teams going, enable things to happen so that we can co-produce and have these conversations about what matters with the people we support. But we're saying you have to change your mindset. You have to change the systems of how the organization runs to make this happen. We can't tell you what it's going to look like because every case is different. We're operating in complexity, it's the nature of co-production. So you have to do things completely differently, but we can't tell you how. And at the same time, you've got to keep delivering services day to day because we're talking about people's life and livelihood and support. And, you know, at its worst, people might die if we don't do the right thing and, you know, if we don't keep supporting people. It's an impossible bind to be in. You like, do this, but don't do this and do it differently, but we can't tell you how. So it's really difficult for the people who deal with the systems that enable organizations to be organizations to make that switch. And that's why the only solution is to try small experiments and try small things. We cannot expect an organization to change A, overnight, and B, as a whole, as an entire organism, because we don't know where we're going with it yet. So it's not pass or fail. You know, we do this or we don't do this, and we're likely to fail because we don't know where we're going with it. And if we fail, we're going to be in the papers. It's just a media disaster. But really what we're inviting people to do is saying, enable these spaces. Like we were saying earlier, if you're a manager, enable a team to try things in a safe way. Take risks at a calculated level. Work with a few people. Learn by doing. Be open about what you're learning. Be open about this is a process that we're engaging in together. So that actually we're learning this together and we're learning from what's happening. And then we find what sticks. We try lots of things. We do lots of prototypes. This links up a bit with innovation thinking and design thinking. So we try lots of things. We do the experiments. We figure out which ones work. And then we translate those to generalize them. So we've got to do small experiments, push at the open doors, find the stuff that's working, and then scale it from there. We cannot change, and we shouldn't expect to change a system overnight because we're in complexity. Remember, we're not in a complicated process where we'll plan it all up front and roll it out. So we've got to create it as we go. And the best thing that this middle layer of people in organizations can do is give permission and look for the learning and by doing so, change their organizational culture into being a learning organization and being supportive of innovation and of people's genius and people's skills and people's abilities within the teams.
I think that's so true. And it really does align with innovation thinking. It's about shifting our culture from a focus on risk to a focus on opportunity.
Yes.
And from a focus on failure to a focus on learning.
Yes.
And if our organizations put all of their energy into taking opportunities and learning from mistakes, in the long run, that'll deliver far better outcomes than putting all of our energy into avoiding risk and avoiding failure at all costs.
Yeah.
Easy to say, hard to do.
Definitely. And culture isn't, you know, culture is the sum of all our behaviors and the stuff that we do every day. So the only way to change a culture is that everybody in their own way does a little bit and learns themselves. I've got a footnote to that because I was talking to somebody who works in government the other day. And actually the government, you know, national government has a number of roles and some of them are quite collaborative, quite co-productive and, you know, are about operating in complexity. But some of the roles of government are about regulation, are about, I've forgotten all the words I want, but, you know, they're much more in a complicated dimension. You know, they're more process driven. They kind of like doing stuff. And so we're not expecting something like a national government to just to go full co-productive, but we're expecting or we're hoping that in the bits where it matters, like that conversation we were having about complexity theory, don't try and co-produce everything, but where you would really benefit from co-producing, then do it there. So we're not saying every organization should switch to being complete, you know, innovation and co-production organization, but there are key bits in every organization where that would make a significant difference.
Yeah, and I suppose it's about not letting those processes push out the pockets where innovation and co-production are most needed.
Yeah, yes, that's often what happens.
And question number five, last but definitely by no means least, and one which not only do I think we get asked a lot, but we probably ask ourselves quite often, and one that I know lots of our listeners will feel, whether they've been on this journey for a long time or whether they're thinking about co-production only in the last days and weeks, is why does doing co-production sometimes feel like such hard work?
Because it is. We're operating in complexity by definition. We're dealing with interpersonal human relationships. Things are not always easy. Actually, I was going to say things are seldom easy. It depends on in kind of what day I'm having. But conflict is going to come up because we're trying to effect change and transformation, and systems by their very nature are trying to stay static. And so conflict happens. We have to have, it's a constant negotiation with other people and trying to find common ground and common values with other people. People, you know, you find allies and then they might move jobs and then you have to start building again with new people. It might not work the same. There's so many moving parts and variables, you know, this whole complex adaptive systems. It's, I know it's life, but also it's not straightforward and it's not easy 100% of the time. So it is a journey. It is hard work. It is completely worthwhile and worth doing. Absolutely, hand on heart, I deeply believe that. But it doesn't mean that it's easy and a bed of roses all the way along. So you've got to find the people who think like you and have the same values as you. Because if you're on your own in an organization, or it feels like you're on your own in an organization to be thinking in this way, it can feel extremely lonely. So find the people on your wavelength. And if you can't identify them in your organization yet, actually, there's a whole network. You know, there's local networks, there's the Wales network of co-production practitioners, and we're all here with the same values and believing that in the purpose and the value of doing co-production together, and we can cheer each other on and support each other. And that's hugely important. Because if it feels lonely, it feels like you're pushing a boulder uphill all of the time. And that's just too much hard work. We don't want you to burn out because the work you are doing is too important to not do it. So look after yourself as well. We need to look after one another. And that's why we find these other people who believe in co-production and you know, egg each other on, cheer each other on. But also look after yourself, because you'll be finding along this journey. And that also contributes to what makes it hard sometimes is you're going to be reassessing who you are, how you show up. What does it mean to be a public servant or a civil servant? What does it mean to be able to say, well, I don't know, let's figure it out together? You don't have to be the rescuer. You don't have to be the person who helps everybody. You can give people space to find their own answers. And that means a lot of self-reflection and figure out, changing how you figure out who you are. And that takes work. That's emotional labor. And that takes effort. So you've got to allow yourself to have that internal journey in order to be able to do the external journey of co-production with your organization. But be kind to yourself, because it's not going to happen overnight and it's not always going to be easy. But we'll definitely end up all together in a better place as a result.
It's that old JFK saying, isn't it? If we don't do these things because they're easy, we do them because they're hard.
Yes, absolutely.
But caveated, like you said, with that doesn't mean we should be beating ourselves up here. We need to, it only makes caring and looking out for one another even more important as we get on with this.
That's right.
Well, five questions there, which we're asked a lot. We reflect on a lot. We tried to give you some insight into the way in which we go about answering those with the individuals and the organizations we support. We know many of you listening may have been thinking about these questions too, and we hope our answers have in some way given you some reassurance and the confidence to reach out to us, reach out to your colleagues, reach out to your networks and explore these things together as well. Noreen, thanks once again. It's always a pleasure, and I'll speak to you again very soon.
Thank you so much.